This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Holly Ford, whose bequeath the fellowship is, was an art educator. And I think out of the nine current ones, all of them, I could be wrong about, there may be one or two that's not, but have had, you know, you had a role in academia here in Portland or in the, you know,
in the
Oregon,
state.
The state, in the area. So that is something that may change in the next 2 years. There's two more years of the fellowship funding, and it may go on from there. There's been some discussion about that, but yeah.
And yes, to you artists out there, you can apply if you meet the requirements, and the deadline is March 15th, and you can, I'm sure if you Google Ford Family Foundation, the fellowship, you can find out more information about it. The show that's up right now, let's see, we tell ourselves stories in order to live.
Correct.
That's the name of the title. And this is from a Joan Didion book? Or?
It's a quote. I actually am not familiar with the book. It's from a book, I believe it's called The White Album, that she wrote. And we all met with Cassandra Koblenz, who is the curator, she's a LA-based independent curator, and she's wonderful, and she sort of built the framework for the show around this quote, which was really interesting for me, because one of the first things she asked me in my studio, there are interviews that she did with us that I think will eventually be posted on the Museum of Contemporary Craft website. But the first question out of the gate was, what's your relationship with narrative and storytelling? And coming up over the years as an abstract painter, I mean, identifying in some ways, maybe more loosely now, but certainly coming up and thinking very deeply about abstraction and the role of abstraction, narrative is has been something I've sort of avoided.
Or, yes.
You know.
Uh-huh. It's experiential as opposed to a story.
Correct. Perceptual, experiential, material. But I have to say that, you know, I think with some of the developments that are going on with painting currently, and the amount of discourse that's happening around how abstraction is, abstract painting in particular, is shifting its MO, I feel like there certainly is room for inference.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily call it, you know, flat out storytelling.
Uh-huh. But you're discussing painting in some way, and art and art history in some way. Maybe
in my
that.
Work.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Those things
okay.
as well. And so there may be an embedded inference around the narrative of 20th century painting, for
right.
example, in my work.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I shouldn't say there may be, there is.
but then some of the artists, and I don't want to particularly get into them in this half hour, but some of the artists are maybe more narrative, maybe they're telling more stories, and the curator is made a thread.
Absolutely.
Right.
I hope people go and see it. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those cases where this is a group of nine artists that maybe the only thing they have in common is that they've been awarded this fellowship, you know,
uh-huh.
and that's always, I'm sure, incredibly challenging to tackle as a curator.
Uh-huh.
But I think you'll see that, especially with the catalog and the writing that she's done and the thinking that she's done around it, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty compelling.
Yes. So I'll let you know that at the Museum of Contemporary Craft, which is in the DeSoto building that's here in Northwest Portland, there's a catalog that's available about this show as well. So you can get, you know, see all kinds of stuff about all of the artists in the catalog as well as the exhibition. So did you have any say? This is just sort of a off thing. Did you have any say about what works we're going to show, or
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I know some of the artists were in the process of making new work, since I'm a current fellow, I'm a 2012 fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of stuff in the studio, and so I basically had a studio visit where we got to discuss what she was interested in, what I was interested in, and how that dovetailed with the ideas that were developing in her mind around, you know, this idea of telling stories. And fortuitously or coincidentally, I have been working with images more in the last few years, particularly images from print media, magazine, fashion images, yes. and sort of redacting them, for lack of a better word.
So what you're telling us is that there are images that, you know, someone else might actually collage with, but you're using those as reference to how you're making a painting. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
the way it's cut up, the way the space is cut up, and everything.
Well, with the work that's in the museum, not immediately evident, but a way to look at it is that the magazine page has become a kind of ground zero for different threads of work that I've been doing. There are four prints, they're archival pigment prints that are prints of photographs that are collaged magazine pages. So the starting point is the magazine page, and then I'm using material on top of that that gets then photographed and then output as a limited edition archival pigment print. Mm-hmm. And those are downstairs. Those are down in the gallery shop. They're not up with the rest of the paintings. The paintings...
But they're online somewhere, because I think I saw them.
They're on my website.
Okay.
Maybe not. They need to get on my website.
I think they're online somewhere, because I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Looks like collage of... from magazines, but it's several points removed, so to speak.
Yes, you wouldn't. Yes. It's not immediately evident, which is part of what I'm working with. But so the paintings that you'll see in the museum upstairs in my section, there are five paintings, and they reference very indirectly the magazine page. The magazine page was the genesis of them, but mm-hmm. They're not literally using that material. I'm not collaging. There's fabric. All of them are draped or covered or stretched with fabric. And so...
Yes, let's briefly kind of discuss. When we walk in, what do we see?
When you walk into the museum or into my space...
No, let's describe. Let's describe some of your paintings.
There are... three large paintings that are 50 inches high. And those three paintings are, they start with some very gestural kinds of brushwork, very kind of fresh and quick. And then in relationship to that, I have in all three of them draped them. Uh-huh. I've stapled, I've used cut tacks, upholstery tacks to...
sometimes they even feel bound. Sometimes they're draped and sometimes they're like bondaged.
Absolutely. The two small ones are, I'm calling them redressed. Uh-huh. In fact, that's their titles, redressed, as a way to talk about fixing something or correcting something. And in fact, the two small ones that you see that do look more like they're bound, they have failed, what I consider failed paintings underneath them.
And was that how you made that decision to redress them?
Yes.
And you felt they were failed paintings?
Well, they were abandoned.
Okay.
You know, the paintings that are failed or abandoned were based on magazine pages. At one point, I was painting out a lot of the imagery in the magazine page and then using that as like a study and going on to a panel referring to that study and making an image that looked like, you know, the information that was on that painted over page. Uh-huh. And I did a lot of that work and some of them just failed. And so...
So, but you're still using that surface to, because you have all these, you have many ways of making a painting.
I do.
Right. So I wanted to just say too that the artist, Michelle Ross, is represented by Elizabeth Leach. So you can go to elizabethleach.com to see images as well as going to the Museum of Contemporary Crafts website.
That's right.
Because there's sort of like different things that we're talking about here, and it's not all going to be probably on the museum or
no.
Museum site, right?
No.
Especially once we start referencing all these different ways that you make a painting.
Right.
So let's talk about just one of them, you know, kind of maybe start to finish, if you don't mind, like Dark Adam, Dark Eve.
Okay.
So first of all, talk to me about the title.
Okay. Well, this was part of the really informative and helpful conversation I have with Cassandra Koblenz in the studio, because this is the work that we talked, I mean, obviously it's in the show, so it's the work that she decided we agreed on. And that, though, these titles, you know, I just decided not to fight them. I'm working in the studio, I'm working on a painting like that. It's got a lot of sort of gestural, drippy sort of paint, and then it's swathed with these two sort of columns of fabric. One's a really beautiful dark blue silk kind of blend, and the other is a pinstripe wool. And they, you know, once I was in the middle of it, that title, I mean, I hate to sound all, you know, woo-woo, but it just popped into my head. And, and I thought, oh, God, you know, that's two characters, that's biblical, that's mythological. I mean, that is, those are places that I don't tend to go with my work. And so, particularly with this group that's in the museum, I had also had a studio visit with someone else who's who's trained in Freudian psychoanalysis, and that was an interesting conversation in regards to the idea of the inferred body. You know, I'm not painting figures. I'm not the least bit interested in working figuratively. But what happens with the fabric, with the cloth, and particularly, and I'm choosing very carefully what these fabrics are. I mean, that pinstripe and that silk, you know, there was no avoiding it. And sometimes I work in a very calculated way, like when I'm copying the magazine page, you know, it's very measured and careful. And in this case, with this group of work, I was working very quickly and intuitively. And I think the work's really fresh for that reason. But I wasn't, once those titles came to me, like the other two, The Fixer is the other one, and the other one is Untitled, in parentheses, Cave. You know, what I had to realize and kind of own is that there's, you know, there's content that I'm inferring here with these. And I'm inferring a figure, I'm inferring spaces. And as, you know, and I'm interested in that gap between what the title may, where the title may lead you and what you actually
are experiencing or seeing in front of you,
confronted with visually and materially.
How did you get to fabric? Like, I mean, how did that happen? I mean, talk about it. Like, when was, how did you do it? How did you arrive at it initially anyway?
Well, the history of my work really has always involved collage. So I have boxes of all kinds of collage material that in many cases becomes, it was fabric, just scraps of fabric. And for a lot of years, I was just literally gluing, embedding, trying to, you know, in good art student fashion, integrate the surface, you know, with the all the collage material, and that seemed to always be the goal. And at some point, I know what it was. I inherited my grandmother's sewing machine, and I'm a failed seamstress. I was never, ever able to, like, make that article of clothing work, and there were many, many, like, tearing out the hair sessions.
But the sewing machine gave you something else, though.
It did. And then what I realized, is that I didn't have to try to integrate. At some point, I just, you know, just said, to hell with it. I don't have to try to integrate these pieces of cloth onto the surface. What happens
when you
if they move? Or, when I don't. And then, you know, of course, canvas is
cloth as well.
Yeah, cloth as well.
So it's kind of like full, you're kind of showing a full circle in a sense when you're presenting work this way. I wanted to remind the listener that you're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Ava Lake, and this is Art Focus. And if you want more information about this radio show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus, and you'll see links to my guests. And if you go back through the schedule, you can see lots of audio files of past shows that I've done. I have with me today Michelle Ross. So much fun. She's a part of a group show that's at the Museum of Contemporary Craft. She's also represented by Elizabeth Leach. And we're talking about her work that's at the museum, but also just her work in general. So now, something very interesting right there. You're talking about how it all kind of started Michelle, kind of, you were like a collage artist, really, in a sense, as how. So do you call yourself a painter? I mean, how does it feel when people call you a painter? Because as I researched for this interview, I realized she's a collage artist.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with that. I mean, it's so funny. A young intern at the museum sort of apologized when he was asking a question, and he said something like, for lack of a better term, you're collaging. And I was like, yeah. I mean, in my mind, that is the dominant 20th century. And now with new technology, the 21st century mashup of, I mean, it seems so obvious, yes. You know, it's a piecing mentality. It's a constructive mentality that for me goes back to the early 20th century and constructivism. But
and
some of those amazing female artists like Hannah Hawke and but I think through color, and I think through surface, and I think through construction and piecing. So, you know, whether I identify as a...
For you, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter.
The people are, you know, of course, the more you show, people want to say you're something and kind of make it very easy and what have you. And it's not really. It's a lot more wayward than that as far as definitions go. Here's another one.
Okay.
Provisional painting.
I'm interested in that conversation.
Okay.
I don't know how generative it is for me personally.
Some of your paintings to me seem very related to this.
Absolutely. And that also has to do with my maybe engagement with or sort of questioning of... this kind of fetishization of technique or craft, like, and I'm in the context of a craft. I teach at
Community.
Oregon College of, art and craft, and so I'm very interested in. I mean, the idea of provisional painting also sort of taps into serious doubt and questioning of the relevance of painting. And anyone who's a painter probably knows what I'm saying. It's like you have to confront that stuff.
Yes. And all the history and everything.
All of it, you know. Uh-huh. And I mean, and I feel like you have to confront photography as well.
Yes. So you're doing all of that within your work. But you were working like this before there was such a term, provisional painting, right?
Yeah. Yes. The show that I had at the Savage Gallery in 2001 was a lot of detritus, a lot of just like throwing everything I had in my studio onto the surface. There was a lot of paint as well.
Okay.
They were large panels and... And, you know, a few of them were really good, but some of them were not.
We grow up in public is the thing with artists, you know. It's truly, you know.
It's true.
We totally grew up in public. So you were also in the Contemporary Northwest Art Awards in the museum. Maybe that was a couple years ago?
2010.
Yeah. So I remember those paintings.
Yeah.
I remember that work. So a couple of observations. One was just talking in comparison, okay?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Scale.
Sure.
And maybe boldness. Like, or maybe you were more, I don't want to say, is masculine is maybe not the right word, but can you compare to us with the, because I see some differences.
I think that work was on the cusp of, it was... Actually, it's been spoken about by others as transitional.
The museum?
Yeah, the
Portland
the PAM,
Art Museum.
The PAM, Contemporary Northwest Art. And I do think there were a few small pieces there where I was beginning to drape, let the fabric hang. But their main larger pieces, there was a series called Cloud Studies, had really beautiful linen that was once really beautiful, just embedded and glued on and then sort of covered up.
Uh-huh.
Those paintings were, I'm proud of that work. I think it was strong work, but they were tentative in the sense that I really was ready to be doing the work that's in the museum.
I remember you actually saying this when the show happened. You said, well, I'm actually onto something else. And you kind of felt like you had your feet in two different places because here on exhibit was a particular body of work, but you had already
moved on,
come to some other community, mm-hmm. some other conclusions,
yeah,
about where you wanted to go.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, one thing, I guess I wasn't aware, all your work in printmaking and all that kind of stuff. So what else have you done that's kind of photo-based? And also, what is the architecture? What does that mean? These they were interiors, right?
Yeah.
The magazine things. Like, how, why that?
Yeah. Honestly, it gets back to the magazine page. And I'm speaking tonight as part of a panel discussion at the Museum of Contemporary Craft.
Oh, yeah, we should mention that. You are going to be giving a presentation tonight at the Museum of Contemporary Craft, yourself and two other artists.
Yes, Ellen Esperance and Aki Miyoko.
At what time?
6:30.
Okay.
And I want to kind of emphasize that the magazine page became this vehicle for me to just experience the world, you know. I mean, I experienced the natural world here in the Pacific Northwest, but, and I'm going to try to talk about that a little bit more tonight. But the image based work, the work where I'm either redacting, covering up, it's usually advertising imagery. It's some of them are interiors, but that's almost another strain that I've kind of put on hold for the moment.
Uh-huh.
But many of them are editorial fashion layout,
you know,
covering up the figure essentially. And what results is this sort of very awkward geometry, this circumscribed circumscribed sort of geometry that's a result of just trying to get rid of the information, the clothing, the woman, the hair, you know, covering that up. And then I have to ask myself, and I'm in the middle of this now, is like, why am I covering that up? What am I negating, and why am I negating it?
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to some conclusions about that I won't go into right now, but that I hope to talk about tonight. And so that the print-based, I have the fortune of having access to a really, really nice digital imaging lab up at uh-huh. OCAC, and have access to working quickly and efficiently and inexpensively with processing these images, and either working on top of the digital print physically with the paint, or having them photographed after I've worked on top of them.
Uh-huh.
There's all kinds of archival issues that I'm exploring, like how to sort of work around that. And one place I'm at right now is that the relationship a painter has to photography is very most of the time in terms of documenting their work.
Yes.
And so I'm at a place where I've done all this work on top of magazine pages that are going to completely fall apart and disintegrate. And so I'm having them photographed in a way that they can then be viewed as equal to, perhaps,
the other
the
works.
Paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Question. So there has been discussion about, first of all, this show and this show is at the Museum of Contemporary Craft. So, you know, it relates to craft, I suppose, in some way, just by nature of being there. But I've also been reading online here and there about the legacy of craft, mm-hmm. and it being this kind of issue for these fellows or for awards in Portland.
Yeah.
Or recognition grants for artists in Portland. And, you know, regarding this conversation that you and I are having here, you said pretty early on in the half hour, well, you know, I'm sort of like going full circle with what I'm making. I mean, mm-hmm. you're acknowledging craft, but you're kind of taking things apart and mm-hmm. showing all mm-hmm. the guts.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to add to this conversation? Does it seem redundant to you, or does it seem...
I don't pay attention to it very much.
No.
I have my own practice, my own material practice, where I'm confronted with my own technical problems, and I consider that the craft.
Yes.
And I'm carving that out for myself. And I think one could make the argument that painting maybe now is more aligned with some sort of traditional notion of craft in relationship to new media and new technologies. But I think that's a dead end too. I think Glenn Adamson has done some interesting theorizing on craft, but I think ultimately, you know, I think this show, especially, and if you think of someone like Heidi Schwegler or even Aki, who's photo-based, I think that that discussion just needs to sort of sink into the ground and be a, and it can be there as a foundation, but I don't think it's as interesting as the ideas that the artists are working with.
Well, you know, one thing you have at OCAC is know the rules to break the rules.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's
but there's the, some, there's some truth to that.
Absolutely.
No. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is some truth to that.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, I think that for me, your question about why these other materials, I mean, for me, taking on photography or working with cloth as a medium is a way to sort of de-skill. You get bored when you kind of know what you can do with the materials.
Uh-huh.
So if you throw something else into the mix and then you have to confront what the effect of that is, it forces you to, you create these new technical problems and you create new challenges, and it keeps you interested. I mean, it keeps me interested.
You're an educator. How long have you been doing that?
I think I'm
a decade at least.
15, oh yeah.
Okay.
Over
so
a decade.
Just quickly.
Yes.
What do you want your students to take away? What do you think is, what's something that you would like them to have?
I want them to be absolutely confident in the materials that they are using currently and be absolutely curious to take on new materials, and I want them to not be afraid of whatever subject matter or content that they have to deal with.
Uh-huh. Great answer.
Thanks.
Michelle Ross, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
So Michelle Ross, she's an artist who's actually a part of a panel discussion that's tonight at 6:30 at the Museum of Contemporary Craft, and that's at the DeSoto Building in Northwest Portland. And you can see more images of her work if you go to elizabethleach.com as well. Wanted to let you know that, of course, Joseph Gallivan is now guest hosting with me, which is really great. He'll be hosting next week. And then I come back 2 weeks from now, and I'm going to have Rita Robillard with me. She has a really gorgeous show at Ogden Gallery right now.
Awesome. Yeah,
it is awesome. Yep. It is fabulous. So she'll be my guest in 2 weeks. And my name is Ava Lake. Thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. I'll be talking with you in a couple weeks.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor the Portland premiere of Who Bombed Judy Berry at the Clinton Street Theater, Wednesday, February 13th. The film will play at both 7 p.m. and 9:15. This new documentary covers the 1990 bomb attack on two Northern California environmental activists, which still remains unsolved. The film is a compelling tribute to Berry, a fiery speaker whose background as a union organizer put her in a unique position to bridge the cultural divide between forest activists and rank-and-file loggers.
I knew it was a bomb the second that it exploded. I felt it rip through me with just a force more powerful and terrible than anything that I could describe.
Again, that's Wednesday, February 13th at the Clinton Street Theater. More information may be found at kboo.fm/Berry2013.
And tune in to Political Perspectives on Wednesday morning at 9 as Paul Rowland interviews Daryl Cherney. Cherney, a central figure in the events depicted in the film, is also one of the film's producers. This interview will go into the history and importance of the Earth First movement, the continuing repression of environmental and other activists, and the ongoing attempt to find out who was responsible for the 1990 car bombing.
You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
And now, the KBOO News at Noon for Tuesday, February 12th, 2013. A forum was held last night at the University of Oregon over whether to arm campus police with guns. Currently, no member of the University of Oregon's 13-member campus police carries a firearm. Eugene's district attorney Alex Gardner stressed that high crime rates and homicide rates in Lane County require more security at the University of Oregon. Most students at the forum expressed suspicion of or opposition to arming the campus police. A similar forum on the same topic will be held this evening at 5 p.m. at Portland State University at the Smith Student Union. On Monday, Hurricane Sandy survivors and environmental activists gathered in front of the White House to demand that President Obama address climate change in his State of the Union address tonight. They gathered 280,000 signatures in a petition that they submitted to the president. Many of those affected by Hurricane Sandy wonder what will be done to prevent such disasters from happening again, and are demanding that the issue of climate change be addressed at a federal level. President Obama is expected to pass an executive order on cybersecurity tomorrow. The move is in response to Congress's failure to pass a cybersecurity bill. The last Congress saw the introduction of 40 bills on cybersecurity, but none of them passed. Some in Congress have criticized the president for going around the legislative system. North Korea conducted their third nuclear test in 7 years last night. President Obama promised to swiftly address North Korea's developing nuclear program, though direct military confrontation remains unlikely. In tonight's State of the Union, Obama is expected to propose a global denuclearization program. China expressed their opposition to the nuclear test, but called for measured responses by both sides. Also in tonight's State of the Union address, President Obama is expected to announce plans to cut the troop level in Afghanistan by half in the next year. There are currently 66,000 United States troops in Afghanistan. This would mean a faster withdrawal than many U.S. commanders have recommended. White House officials have been considering plans to reduce the United States presence in Afghanistan to 2,500 troops by 2015. This number is still a bigger presence than Obama's promise to fully retreat from Afghanistan by 2014. And that's it for KBOO News at Noon for Tuesday, February 12th, 2013. I'm Rob Shryock. Tune in every weekday at 5 for more local, national, and international news produced by volunteers right here in our Portland studios.
February 7, 2013. KBOO Navigator Report. On Valentine's Day, Contessa de la Luna is bringing a spectacular show complete with music, games, prizes, and the classic movie Rear Window to the Clinton Street Theater. 100% of the proceeds will benefit KBOO. Visit kboo.fm for details. Kaboom! 2013 is KBOO's 45th anniversary. Huge celebration plans are